This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm at the Milk and Sugar studio in Parkhurst today for a debate on e-tolls with two people who know more about the subject than probably anyone in this country. I have no doubt this is going to be an interesting and robust debate about a subject that has many South Africans hot under the collar. So, to speak against the e-toll system, I'm very pleased to welcome someone who I think needs no introduction to South Africans, and that's Wayne Duvenage, CEO of the Organization Undoing Tax Abuse, or better known as OTA. And in the other corner, as it were, to argue in favor of the e-toll system, I'd like to welcome Kuni Vermaak. Kuni is CEO of Electronic Toll Collection, or ETC, the company responsible for the management and collection of e-tolls on behalf of SANRAL. Gentlemen, welcome to the Tech Central podcast, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So, the way we're going to do this today is I'm going to ask you both to spend just a couple of minutes explaining your point of view on the subject. I'm going to start with Kuni, and then we'll go over to you, Wayne. Kuni, you were quoted in the media a couple of weeks ago saying that you used to be one of the majority of people who refused to pay their e-tolls, but that you've changed your mind about the system. First of all, why have you changed your views beyond the fact, of course, that you now work for ETC? And why do you believe the e-toll system as it is currently stands is the right one?
Yeah, I think, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I think what we have seen is, and I would probably be part of that group of citizens that I think over a number of years have become a bit complacent. If we look at public participation that we had when e-tolls were declared and the public participation processes that followed, I think it was not as robust as what we see currently with the land claim issue. And so that, I think, encourages me quite a lot to see that actually South Africans are becoming more and more involved. Simply put, I think I've been quite ignorant about it. My initial reason for paying it was because, I mean, you cannot support an organization and then not pay. But if we look at, because I think that what has also happened is that there's been really one voice out there, and that has been the voice of OTA. I think, and what we have seen and experienced is that perhaps not all the facts are out in the open for public to make a informed decision.
So what changed for you? I mean, you were one of the people who was refusing to pay e-tolls. What did you base that on, and what facts changed in your mind that you now pay?
So the initial facts was, well, the system is illegal. But when you actually read through the case law, you see that the system is not illegal. The system is fully legal and was sanctioned by the courts. So from that perspective, I mean, it then becomes a valid tax, and people should just be paying. I think there was also misconceptions around, so what are the fees, and is this an exorbitant amount of thousands of rands per month? You know, when I had to settle my bill, it was an extraordinary amount of money. But when you get to understand the system, and you understand, for example, that the cap currently is 266 rand per month, then it becomes quite an affordable ways and means of actually contributing to toll. I think, again, when you start reading about and getting informed about the GFIP, which is the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Scheme, which was devised early 2000s. I mean, the technology was, in my view, early 2000s, the technology was decided on, even way before CUPS was on the horizon. The real issue is that there are three phases. Currently, what we see is only phase one was ever implemented. There's another 158 kilometers of brand new road that needs to be built as part of phase two. So I think when the public has not been well informed to make decisions, and when people hear only one voice, and when people only hear one side of the story, I think it's impossible for people to come to any other conclusions. It's like if people constantly say that, for example, that there was corruption and nobody opposes that argument, then that becomes de facto an acceptable standard for people.
All right, Wayne, let me bring you in here. ARTA was founded originally to take on the eTolls project. The organization has since morphed into fighting a lot of other causes, but eTolls remains one of your primary focuses. What, in your view, is wrong with the system? I mean, someone has to pay for the road upgrades.
Absolutely, and we've never said that we shouldn't pay for the road upgrade, by the way. I think quite the contrary. At the time, the people were in the dark. The people were ignorant, and it was ARTA, took ARTA. And Kasacha and others, by the way, and it's not just ARTA. I think, as Kuni says, there's not one voice there. There's Kasacha, there are political parties. Every single political party but the ruling party voted against this, by the way. And if you go out into the streets and you ask people if they know of ARTA, it's not as widespread as people think. We wish we were that powerful, but we're not. So the reality is that at the time, nobody knew what was going on with eTolls, in fact. And when it was introduced, the whole fleet industries, the big players, I was the CEO of Avis at the time, learned for the first time in 2010, just after the World Cup, that these things that we've been being built on the side of the roads were going to be used to, debit us for the use of these roads and this upgrade. It was a nice upgrade. We've got nothing wrong with Sanrail's engineers that build good roads. So let's also clear that thing that we're just anti-Sanrail and anti-government. Not at all. But what we started to find out as we dug deeper is that Sanrail had run roughshod, absolutely roughshod, over meaningful public consultation. It's very important, Section 195 of the Constitution, that you do this properly. And what they did was placed one advert in six newspapers. Literally, that's what they did. Very ambiguous, and they got 28 responses, and they ticked the box of public consultation. And that's a very, very sad situation, because we have 3.5 million motorists, and that wasn't the case. And the more we engaged, and by the way, we tried to find solutions to our industry, and the more we engaged with industry players out there, the more we realized how much society was kept in the dark, how little we knew about this process. And the more we looked into it, the more we see why these schemes fail around the world, and they do, why this one had all the hallmarks of failure. And what we didn't want to do was become an industry or just individuals or people that were partially part of the system when many people were not going to ever pay. They were never going to pay, whether ARTA was here or not. And whether your compliance levels are at 60 or 70 or even 80% on a user pay scheme, that's a failure. And this one, they said in court, was going to get to 93.7% compliance. Well, it never achieved 40%. Now, they might attribute some of that to us, but not all of it. And so we sit here today with a completely failed scheme, 25% compliance. Sanrail says 30. Let's split that in the middle, then 27%. And it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense when you have alternatives. And we have to express that and expand. So we became the conscience of society. We started to expose grossly misleading information being put out by Sanrail, grossly misleading information about the scheme and about the workability thereof, about the tenders. I mean, ETC got this contract. They won it at 6.2 billion rand. When you find the agreements are signed, it's over 10 billion rand. There's a 77% increase in the operations service element of that contract. We've got no formal answers from government, and we need answers to that. So this thing is flawed in many respects.
I'd like to explore the alternatives in some detail.
Can I respond to
some of course you can.
I think not everything that Wayne is alluding to is absolutely accurate. If you read Sanrail's latest financial reports, there's actually a statement made by the Auditor General to say that there were a number of complaints regarding the tender process. In fact, I've got a copy of the audit, the Public Protector's report that indicated that the tender process that Sanrail followed has been totally cleared. So, and that's also reported as part of Sanrail's financials by the Auditor General, acknowledging the Public Protector report dated February this year, and clearing Sanrail of any you know, inappropriateness or not following any protocols or procedures in awarding the tender.
For the ETC contract?
Yes.
Okay, but we need explanations. Because you cannot win a tender on 6.2 billion rand, and 4.7 was the portion of the operations services section, and the contract is signed, and it's just over 10 billion rand. That's a 77% increase. There has been no formal explanation to the people. I'm talking about to the public.
But even the 10 billion, I think, Wayne, is not really an accurate figure. If you look at even currently spending after 8 years, it's just over 4 billion. So there's no way that the contract will get to 10 billion. I do not understand exactly how the contract gets to 4 billion. For example, one of the aspects that could be a contributing factor to that is the escalation clause. The CPI clause allows for price escalation because, you know, we have inflationary increases. So if I still do work at the rate of 2009 or 2010, obviously, I mean, the cost is more than doubled by then.
But that's not the point.
The reality of this is that the public protector's report very clearly indicates, and I mean, the only thing that I can say about the public protector's report is that there's a very specific clause in it to say that if you do have a copy of this, you cannot distribute it. So I do recommend OTA gets it from the public protector themselves or from SONRAL.
Have you read that report, Wayne?
No.
Not yet. Okay. So I just wanted to ask you before we move on and talk a bit about the history of this, Wayne. Do you support the idea of user pays, or would you prefer to see a difference?
I think we'd be very silly to say that we don't support user pays. I mean, user pays in the context of it being efficient and applied properly, absolutely. You don't pay electricity, it gets switched off.
Yeah.
But when you try to apply it in the context of roads like this, a drive now, pay later scheme, you best make sure that you got all your systems and your processes right 100%. And so it works very well in London. It works very well in Stockholm and in a number of places in the world. But it has also failed grossly in other places of the world. And when you start relying on e-natives, which e-natives themselves say that is not accurate, when you rely on the post office to get your post to people so they can enjoy the benefits of the discounted rates, when you're relying on enforcement, on R2, for instance, and this whole scheme, by the way, was written with R2 in mind. R2 was never, still isn't implemented to this day, and it was written as if R2 was going to be implemented. So when you cannot enforce a user pay scheme, when you cannot manage it, administer it, well, then don't go there, especially when you have alternatives, which, by the way, are significantly cheaper. You know, you've got a massive cost on e-toll here, and you've got a zero cost in the current systems, which are used, by the way, right now, the Mount Edgecombe freeway system, four-lane highways from Mabeni to Umhlanga Rocks, beautiful, floodlit, not paid through an e-tolling system, paid for through existing grants from Treasury. And by the way, the new freeway that's going to be widened, similar to this one here, from Pietermaritzburg to Durban, will not be tolled. I mean, how do you think they're financing that? They're financing it through taxes, through fuel levies, through allocations. So there is a way to do it. They can do it. They are doing it. Why would you not do it here if you had that option?
Well, I think it's about context, Wayne. So in my view, if I look at the Mount Edgecombe development, the Mount Edgecombe interchange is worth 1.6 billion rand. If you look at phase one of the GFIP, the official figure is that SANRAL spent 22.5 billion rand. So, yes, it is easier to fund out of the fiscus 1.6 billion not over 1 year, but over a number of years, compared to finding 22.5 billion rand. So I think context is also important because scale is fundamentally different. Yeah. The one thing about the GFIP is that there's this argument to say that what we have today is not a workable solution. But I think people need to understand that the GFIP was not envisaged to just be this extension. Mm-hmm. The GFIP is envisaged to be 600 kilometers of road in this network, of which there are the next phase two is really important because it alleviates a lot of congestion that we already experience on the road. But to find 22.5 billion rand, I think is a lot more difficult for government than it is to find 1.7 billion for Mount Edgecombe's interchange.
Well, I think let's put that into context. It wasn't 22, it was actually 17.9, and it shouldn't have been more than 10. Okay, but that's an argument for another day. The road construction, by the way, was inflated and heavily. And we can show you on some work packages compared to others, massive increases and for the same work done when you remove the interchanges and that. But the freeway between Pietermaritzburg and Durban is over 15 billion. Mm-hmm. How's that being financed? Let's put that into context. That is not going to be tolled, and that has been stated it will not be tolled. So we must pay tolls in Gauteng, but not them. And they're financing that through an existing mechanism.
What is that mechanism?
It's not tolls. Well, so what do you think it is?
Well, it is certainly not a fuel levy.
Well, it's coming from the treasury, isn't it?
So it is. But then we have to be clear. It is not funded through a fuel levy. It's funded through the fiscus.
Yes, the fiscus is fed by the fuel levy.
Well, the fuel levy is the fourth largest contributor to the fiscus.
Yes, exactly.
So what we have is you've got VAT, you've got other taxes, you've got many other forms of income that government's got. What we also have to be very clear on is that when people pay for the fuel levy, then the issue about the fuel levy is that it doesn't go into one segregated pot where people can say this is fuel levy money and we can use it on infrastructure. It goes into the fiscus. It goes into one big pot, and that becomes part of the money that government has to spend. And yes, I mean, Wayne, you're right. 85% of the roads in South Africa gets funded from the fiscus, which is fantastic because it is a lot better than it is international. If you go to the United States, then you'll see that only 62% of their fiscus funds roads. If you go to London or Europe, you'll see that 70% of roads there gets funded through the fiscus. The other 30% or the other 38%, and in our case, the other 15% is funded through the user pay principle, which is what we commonly call tolling projects. So it is an accepted norm. I think the fact that South Africa, with its massive caveats, I mean, the difference between the people that are affluent and not affluent is huge. So we have different challenges in South Africa. We have challenges that we have to build a lot of RDP houses. We have to build schools. We have to build hospitals. We have income grants that are a huge burden on the state coffers. So our situation is unique. But even in that instance, we have funded 85% of the roads through the normal fiscus, which I think government has done a fantastic job. But there is 15% of the road that is not funded through the fiscus, and the GFIP is one of them.
The question is, and I think Wayne asked it as well, is it enforceable, particularly in the Gauteng Freeways context, given how much how many people are boycotting the system? Is there any realistic hope of ever enforcing it?
I mean, honestly, if we talk about what's acceptable or what's accepted, there are on the GFIP, there are three regions. There's Ekurhuleni. Ekurhuleni never adopted R2, so they work on CPA, which is Criminal Prosecution Act. Johannesburg and Tshwane adopted R2, so they work under the R2 laws.
All right.
There is an R2 amendment bill that is currently still with
NCOP,
and once that gets amended, that will enforce what they call the R2 block, which means that not paying for e-tolls will be tantamount to be given an infringement notice, and you'll have to pay that before you can increase your renew your license. Enforcement is important. I agree with you. I mean, I think enforcement could have been done obviously a lot better. Like many things that we could have done better on this project. I mean, communication, in my view, can also be better. I think what is really important, though, is that this is not a scheme that is tarnished with corruption. This is not a scheme that is been given to a CUPS or a foreign company, in the back of a corner. This is an open process. I mean, SANRAL's procurement processes have always been transparent, and that's what the Public Protector Report confirms. So I have a lot of appreciation, Wayne, for the work that you guys do around identifying corruption. I think there is so much important work to be done in South Africa around, you know, highlighting what's been wronged in the past, because we have to bring people to book. The one thing that I can say, however, is that there's no corruption here on the GFIP. Yes, it's a scheme that is not necessarily accepted by all the people, but I also believe that people have not been informed. Now, I'm not here to try and convince people otherwise. All that I'm busy with is to say, just hear the other side of the facts and still make the decision. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is important, is that we have a balanced view around what are the facts.
So just coming back to enforceability, Wayne, Kuni's suggesting that the ARTO legislation is going to force motorists to pay their e-tolls in order to get a new license disc on their cars, and if they don't do that, they're obviously in violation and can't drive. Is that legal?
No. It is unconstitutional. You cannot have one law impacting on another. The revenues that are generated from vehicle licenses are regional and provincial and local, whereas tolling is a national matter, firstly. Secondly, there are many flaws in the amendments to the R2 bill, and if it is signed, it will be interdicted because we've gone through it, and there are extremely gross flaws. And thirdly, if you want to bring the fight that the public have, and it's a real and very necessary challenge, by the way, to government on the e-toll matter, into the vehicle licensing space, well, then all you will do is bring the unintended consequences of people not licensing their vehicles. Now you have a bigger problem, and I'm not for 1 minute advocating that. I'm telling you it's going to happen. And then we will have to go and defend people for that, and we'll have to reverse this whole decision. So, look, enforceability, it was always the scheme's downfall, and we've said all along that it was going to be problematic. In fact, it is so problematic, this system, that even the people who get free passage, I'm talking the taxis and the buses and that, they don't have tags for it. Now, if you go to a sector of the society and say, look, we need you to tag it because to get the free passage, you must fit this thing. I mean, the gantry doesn't recognize this as eyes and not billet. And they said no. So how do you administer a system where even the free right doesn't even apply or can't be administered? But I just want to come back to this issue that was said earlier on about the fuel levy. I mean, the fuel levy does feed into the fiscus. We know that it's not ring fenced, but government does allocate through all its taxes tranches to SANRAL to build roads. All it had to do was allocate another $2 billion. The fuel levy, by the way, has gone up by another $50 billion since this decision was made. So it's not as if the money isn't there. They could have funded this matter. And the other thing is, we're not for 1 minute saying don't go and upgrade the rest of the freeway network. By the way, they're not SANRAL's roads, those roads. They belong to the region. The region and the province and the municipalities must continue with their road upgrades and that.
And on
that point of 1%, just 1% of this freeway is Gauteng's freeway. Mm-hmm. The amount of money that SANRAL was billed or had billed the public over this first four full years of e-tolls running was going to generate for SANRAL 34% of their revenue from 1% of their road surface. Now, where's the justice and the user pays in that?
And again, I think it's again skewing the facts. So I would like to respond, first of all, let's deal with the fuel levy, because I think the fuel levy is quite an important conversation. I think Wayne will agree with me that the fuel levy is a diminishing fund, and that's quite a very important concept. What I mean with that is, if you look at the fuel increases over the last 10 years compared to the fuel levy increase within that fuel rate, you'll see that is disproportional. So the fuel, I think the fuel price increased by about 80%, while the fuel levy within that price increased by 100%. Why is that? Because vehicles become more effective and more fuel efficient. And as a result of that, you actually, the government, because with 1 liter of fuel, you can now travel a longer distance. That means that government, people buy less fuel and with more efficient vehicles, and as a result of that, they actually end up with not having enough money or not enough income, and that's why there's this disproportional income. That's why we call it the diminishing fund. And in fact, there's quite a nice study that was done by the University of Stellenbosch to this effect. The second problem with the fuel levy is that it's an indiscriminate tax. What I mean with that is that if you look at the vision of GFIP originally, it was not to burden people that are in the lower income brackets with an additional tax. It was actually to say that businesses, the high income brackets, will have to fund this. And that's the reason why public transport is exempt. In a fuel levy scenario, nobody's exempt. So that means that people driving with their taxi every morning, they pay for the fuel that's in that taxi, and therefore they contribute to the fund. The second argument that's also a very important argument then is to say, well, okay, so if people stay in Springbok and they put in fuel, they are effectively contributing to a fund for Gauteng.
Can it not be ring-fenced for Gauteng?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It remains to be seen. But, I mean, OTA, a couple of months ago, if you remember, in the Western Cape wanted to implement such a ring-fenced fuel lever. They actually wanted to try and raise additional funding for the Western Cape to start funding some of the infrastructure. And OTA was opposed to that. So I'm not sure.
That's not wise. Provincial fuel levies are just opening up a whole new can of worms. But we must just be careful. We're not saying that just use the fuel levy. A fuel levy was one option. We said back then. Now, of course, we know cars get more and more efficient. Had they done this, though, by the way, then they would have already raised the finance for the bond, which they haven't even started to settle. So the more you prolong this, the more this does become a bigger problem. So start now. But the fuel levy is just one element. We've said from the fiscus, because you must understand, this is the economic heartland of this country. The heart beats here. This is a cash-positive province, this in the Western Cape. We are funding what's happening in Springbok, in the Eastern Cape, in KZN. They earn money from what we deliver here. So what we're saying on this 1% of freeway network, if we need 8-lane highways to get this province to and from work and goods to and from markets quicker and better, give this province 8-lane highways, because the positive benefit and spin-off is GDP growth. And even the president in 2013, who reviewed state-owned entities, recommendation number 21 says that social infrastructure, and they say including roads, this is the roads we use daily to get to work, we pay taxes, should not be or should be subject more to a normal taxation for funding and less to a user pays mechanism. And that's from the research that comes from the presidential office. So it makes sense.
I think the issue about the fuel levy is that what you will find is that, I mean, with new technology, people can actually buy themselves out of this fuel levy. So what we see in the next 5 to 10 years with more electric vehicles coming on board is that that fund is going to diminish even more drastically. That means that the fiscus, the amount of money that currently it's the fourth largest contributor for tax, for income, for government, apart from VAT, pay-as-you-earn and companies tax. It's the fourth largest contributor. It will diminish even more with electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. So what you have is, in my view, is you have a very disproportionate and a contribution. So you have people traveling with their taxis, filling up with fuel, contributing to a tax where the wealthy buy themselves an electric vehicle and they use the road for free. Now, I'm not sure what you think, but I think that that is a recipe for disaster for the socioeconomic issues in South Africa. So I honestly believe that, yes, there's a conversation to be held. I think we need to find, there are also hybrid models that we can think of in terms of how do we fund infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But be it as it may, the point, and I think this is the crux of it, is that OTA's view, and in my perception, is to say to people, do not pay your ETO.
Yeah.
What that ends up being is that ends up being an additional interest charge every month to us as South Africans. So SANRAL raised bonds on the open market, and it's clear in the report that those bonds are now with interest is about just 40.5 billion rand. That's in their latest financial statements, 40.5 billion rand. So the 17 odd or whatever the investment was has grown with interest to 40.5 billion. Why? Because SANRAL has not been able to pay the capital. And why has it not been able to do that? Because, yes, the contribution to the scheme is poor. It's very low. And this exacerbates the problem. Because in the end, and this is the end game of this is that if somebody says to tomorrow, if the president, for example, and just listen, just look at the scenario, if President Ramaphosa says, switch off the gantries. Mm. Immediately, the 40.5 billion rand becomes payable
No.
by government. Because the 40.5 billion rand that Sunroll has raised on the open market becomes payable. That means that we, or the government, will have to pay back the bondholders 40.5 billion.
Because immediately.
Because the covenant is broken. The covenant is you have to prove that there's an income stream. The moment that you switch off the income stream, the covenant is broken. It becomes payable. Now, where is this money going to come from? This thing is going to be worse than the SAA bailout. It will certainly downgrade the sovereign debt of South Africa. So what we are busy with is, yes, I understand that people are upset. I have an appreciation for that. But the longer that we do not deal with this problem, the bigger we as broader South Africans are going to eventually face this problem with. And if you look at government spending and you look at, if we look at what they call irregular spending, government also classifies interest as irregular spending. Why? Because they're saying we should have the money, you should not have incurring debt or be late in your payments to incur interest charge. And if you look at the interest charge that we've already accrued on phase one, that could have gone a long way to bail phase two already. So I think what happens to us sometimes is we get into this spin that says, you know, we are upset, we do not want to contribute, but in the end, we will all suffer.
Wayne, if we switch off the gantries tomorrow, is South Africa facing a fiscal crisis?
Well, the gantries are effectively switched off. I mean, they're not paying. They're hardly covering enough.
No. Hold on. Just talk about facts.
Yeah, but
you make a statement to say it's switched off. It's not switched
off. All right, I'll tell you what, keep them on.
Keep them on,
and people stop paying anyway because they're not paying. So effectively, leave them on. But effectively, you're not getting the money. So if that's going to help not trigger the default, then leave the blights burning, leave your little counters counting away, and the people don't pay. The reality that Sanral and EDZ are not coming to is when they say, but the people aren't paying. Well, why is that? That's the real issue here. Why do you think they're not paying, and how do you think you're going to change that? That's not going to change, because this scheme requires people to trust. People need to trust in government, and people lost the trust of this scheme a long time ago, and you're not going to turn that around. And let me explain to you something. The intent, Sanral's intent on the whole GFIP construction project, 350 kilometers, 340 kilometers, by the way, back in 2005 to 2008, stated that the 340 kilometers would be upgraded at a cost of 4.5 billion. $4.5 billion. Now, that was just 3 years before they started to build the road.
This is the original phase.
This is it. Yeah. This is they had marked all phases, the 340 kilometers. Now, when Sanral, who knows the cost of road building, who knew what this project was going to be, they didn't wake up the next year and just start planning it. They've been planning it. When they state in a document that the 340 kilometers are going to cost $4.5 billion. And then 186 kilometers of that, just 3 years later, is costed it went up, by the way, all the way up to 17.9 billion. So, just under half of it becomes four times or three times the price of what the entire project is. Mm. You start to wonder what's going on. And let me explain this to you as well, because this is where the mistrust comes in. When we start to look for, can we see and can we find all the content around the bills of quantities of this road? Do you know that if you go into the data build systems, where Sanral's projects, stadiums, dams, big construction projects are, everything is found there except for the GFIP. They removed it and took all that information away from the public's eyes. Now, why do you hide that information and give all the other information on your other roads? Well, it's deceit. And what we had to stop was Sanral becoming the beneficiaries of an extremely deceitful campaign. That's what this was. And as I've said to you, 34% of your revenue coming from 1% of your roads, this is Sanral, what they would have got had everybody paid their ETOL bills. They would have received 22 billion rand for this, 23 billion rand for the last 4 years from this 1% of their roads. I mean, that is ludicrous. You cannot expect Gauteng residents to fund Sanral to that extent. It's not going to happen.
Again, I think it's not the full picture. Let me explain the full picture. So, yes, Sanral, when they raise the money, they have to raise enough money to pay for the operator. They have to also raise money to pay for the cost that they've raised these bonds for. They have to repay the capital and some interest. And they also have to generate money to start building the next phase. Because remember, the GFIP as it stands right now is not the final product. There's an additional 405 kilometers of road that needs to be constructed. And if we do not do this, and this was an independent report by the Department of Transport, Gauteng Department of Transport, then the average speed in the next 20 years will be less than 10 kilometers an hour on our freeways. So we have an obligation to try and find ways to build. I think what we are saying, Wayne, is we're saying we can live in the past and we can say that nobody's been able to prove any collusion. Nobody's been able to prove any
deceit. There was collusion on the freeways. You know that.
With construction companies. It's a separate thing to the tolling.
And how does SANRAL allow them to pull their wool over their eyes like that?
But they
know what roads cost.
The reality of that is that those companies have paid their dues.
No, they haven't. They have slapped on the wrist. That was an absolute farce and an insult to society.
I don't know if a company pays 800 million rand, that's just a slap on the wrist. What I can say, however, is that this is the reality, is that if the cost was excessive, there's been no official inquiry that has been proven that except OTA's
response. There hasn't been an official inquiry.
The second point is important, and that is that we still have this problem. So after we've had the inquiry and after we've understood that perhaps SANRAL paid, I don't know, even a couple of percentage points more than they should have paid. I don't know what it is. I don't have an idea. We will still come back to this very situation that says we have 40.5 billion rand to repay.
Yeah.
We have to find ways to build new roads. And if we do not do this, then South Africa's economy will suffer. The Gauteng province contributes 40% to GDP. We all know it.
Yeah.
So you stifle this.
And the 1% of the road.
But the 1% of the road funds the rest of the GFA projects. And you have
but
to find
that. You can't do that because the rest of the GFA projects, by the way, are not SANRAL's roads, firstly. They're not. And if the province is handing them over to you, there's an issue with that. But let me ask you this. You keep making out as if you can't build these roads unless you toll them. Let me remind you again. There is a 76-kilometer freeway upgrade between Durban and Maritzburg, 15 billion rand not being funded. So those
is
roads
that
there,
currently under construction? Have you seen
the tenders are out there? The discussions taking
no,
place?
No, the tenders are not out. I know the tenders are not out. And
well,
so
they've been talking about it.
They talk
about 15 billion rand.
But you talk about that as if it's a fact. It's not a fact.
And
the fact
and
of the
Mount
Edgecombe
upgrade?
The Mount Edgecombe upgrade, what I said, is 1.6 billion. So 1.6 billion is about 8% of 22 billion. And that's the issue. It's easier for the fiscus to find 1.6 billion, especially if you've built Mount Edgecombe interchange over the 4 years that it took it to build.
No one's saying you can't build these freeways. We must build them.
And the point that I want to make.
So it's not going to come from GFIP. It's not going to come from tolling. You know that.
But what we are saying, Wayne, is that actually, 85% of our roads is actually funded through the fiscus. We have to come up with other solutions.
You could have done 86%.
So the problem
for the economic hub.
So let's talk about some real solutions.
Let's take a step back for a moment. Maybe it's a bit of an unfair question because you recently joined the ETC business and a lot of this stuff happened before your time. But do you think that SANRAL rushed into this too quickly? Did it consider all of the options available to it, or did it set its mind to doing e-tolls and then set out to do that project without proper consultation?
The best way I can answer that is let me create context. Okay, it's all about context. So context is that at that point in time, I actually worked on the Medupi power station project, and I know that there were a number of projects that were happening. One of them being the Gautrain, and the other one being the GFIP. And what happened very importantly in 2010 was that we had to host the World Cup. Mm-hmm. The instruction from national executive was, get these roads built. Because we needed the roads to host the World Cup.
So it was rushed.
So I wouldn't say it was rushed. One thing that I can say is that you cannot rush the environmental approvals that was needed, the building regulations and all of those. What I can, however, say is that when you have to construct at twice the speed, yes, there's a premium to pay because you built not perhaps as efficient as you want to build normally. You have to build things in 3 years as opposed to 7 years. So there is a premium to pay for that, but the payoff for that was the World Cup. Mm-hmm. The World Cup contributed 100 billion rand to the income line in South Africa at that point in time. So I think it is really important for my side where I say it is about context. It is about, it's the same with the Gautrain. Gautrain had instructions to finish certain sections of the Gautrain and get that open before the World Cup.
But what are you saying in that context, that you can run roughshod over constitutional rights?
It wasn't.
Why?
I'm not saying it. And
public consultation is a constitutional right, and it was run roughshod over. No, it wasn't.
There is high court evidence that where they've ruled, Wayne, and you know it. No. They've ruled. They've ruled on...
The Supreme Court and reversed that judgment completely.
No, it didn't reverse it.
They allowed them to carry on.
It wasn't reversed.
They said that they shouldn't have made the decision on that matter, and
but it never reversed. It never reversed the ruling. If the technicality,
we'll prove it in court, in the defense's challenge.
Agreed.
That the consultation process was an absolute.
The reality of that is that there's a court ruling in the High Court that stands today that says that there was adequate.
Yeah.
So let's just. Those are the facts. Yeah. If OTA believes it's different, then they need to go to court and prove their opposite.
We are going to court. You know that. There's a test case coming.
Well, that's also, I think, a big argument. Mm-hmm. Because it's four years in the making. I mean, I
do... 4 years in the making?
Going to court. I mean, I'm not sure that OTA actually wants to get to court.
Well, we're happy. We're waiting for you.
We're not. We're waiting for you. We are not waiting.
What are you waiting for?
We are waiting for you.
You guys don't want us to bring the regional court matters into the High Court. Why not? Because there are individuals there that have very strong arguments about the fact. Listen to this. They're not on the internet. They don't live near your ETOL centers. They cannot participate in the scheme. They do not get their post. And you cannot criminalize people when they cannot efficiently or effectively participate in the ETOL scheme. So they will be found not guilty.
The important thing, Wayne, is that if OTA is honest and sincere and serious about sorting this out, because we all want finality, let's get it to court.
Yes, we're happy.
We are ready. Sunroll has asked for a case manager from the judiciary.
No, we did.
No, it's actually opposite.
What do you see? I mean, because this is absolute nonsense. Wayne, we've been dragging this thing. We've gone now to the High Court. The case manager has been appointed. We want this matter brought to court quickly.
What exactly is being taken to court?
Well, there's a defenseless challenge because in the Supreme Court of Appeal, Sunroll was said, right, you guys can go ahead, but when somebody when you subpoena someone and they want to raise a defensive challenge, they can. And guess what? That is now happening. And I can tell you right now that Sunroll lost this exact same case in Western Cape, High Court, Supreme Court, Constitutional Court. And by the way, the judge ruled very sternly against Nazir Ali and the team for some serious transgressions that have happened. Very, very serious ones, I can tell you right now.
Again,
and
Wayne.
These will come out in this matter.
Again. You mix issues. The one is to speak about the Western Cape, and I think those court cases have been heard, and I think it's very clear what happened. It is not the GFIP.
Well, the only difference is the GFIP, the road's been built and the money was borrowed. That's the only difference. It doesn't make it legal.
There is a ruling by the High Court that stands today that says... You can toll, and it says that there was adequate public consultation. You know it as well as I do, because that was what was presented. So,
just answer this question. Do you believe, because this is what happened, one advert in six newspapers, the advert hidden in the business and one of them in the international business section, do you believe that 28 responses and there are 3.5 million motorists, and you know, also in that court case, there were 28 responses, do you believe that that was adequate consultation? Do you think that's adequate? You know, the amount of advertising that you guys have been doing here, why didn't they do that at the time? Why didn't they put billboards up? Why didn't they have town hall discussions on this to get the public's input? Why did not one fleet owner know about the scheme until the gantries were going up? That is not adequate consultation. So really, you don't go on a massively complex scheme like this and do the bare minimum. The law is the bare minimum, says minimum 30 days in advert and newspaper. What does SANRAL do? The bare minimum. That is not adequate consultation. That will be proven in this court case here.
So do you believe
that was adequate, by the way?
My view of it is that...
You even said on in the media it wasn't...
My adequate. View of it is that the average road user does not believe that it was adequate. I'm absolutely convinced of that. But that doesn't mean that there's a legal problem. And you see, this is where I think we have to get into solution mode in South Africa. We can constant... the other thing...
We're that happy, to find solutions.
I just wanted to... The point that you raised was, for example, that there's this distrust in government.
Yes.
Okay.
In general.
I think it is there is distrust. Yeah. But what you can be assured of is that the tolling projects are ring-fenced. We have the Auditor General permanently in my office, auditing, checking, verifying every single transaction. What I can give the road user out there, the confidence, is that no money is disappearing. Everything is accounted for. And that is the important thing, is that I understand that the public can be disillusioned with government today. Yeah. But we shouldn't mix these issues. Because government is one, but the other part is that this is a ring-fenced scheme that is audited and validated, and anybody can have insight into that, where it's accounted for.
Well, we know South Africans are gutful with government wastage and corruption, etc. Do you think that e-tolls was something that just galvanized public anger and, well, here's something the government's doing, we're going to take it out on this?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think exactly that happened. I think this was a message that society used. It's a lot easier to withhold your e-tolls than it is not to pay tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think it was a way for society to speak up to government about abuse, about corruption, whatever the case might be. But we should not convolute the argument by saying that is an e-toll problem.
Well, but
it is. It's not about the e-tolls. Nobody has been able to prove that there's been corruption, there's been misappropriation of funds, or anything. And if we want to say, yes, the scheme was expensive in building the construction work, I can't comment on that. But I think there needs to be process to follow through. But that doesn't mean, in my view, that we can continue to advocate that we have public disobedience. Because this is the kicker. On the one side, I say that honestly, Wayne, I mean, I have so much appreciation for what OTA does. I think it is... I mean, we need civil society that actually speak up for and on behalf of our citizens. And that, I think, is crucial in a good democracy. But at the same time, we can't say that we want to make sure that our tax money is properly spent, but we will also at the same time say that we will promote civil disobedience. And that is the issue.
We see the same thing at the SABC, of course. I mean, people don't pay their TV licenses.
And this is why I believe we have to start working around fixing South Africa. So if you've listened to my messages are, I am absolutely not worried to say, does it need to be e-tolls? Yes or no? I don't care. What I am saying is, we as South Africans need to change our view of the world. We need to start fixing our country.
Well, exactly.
And we need to find solutions to it. So it's one thing to criticize the past, and yes, we can find 100 of different problems, but it is time, I believe, that we start looking at alternatives and solutions. And I think that is what we need to do. If we can just agree on one thing to say, let's find solutions for South Africa.
But Kuni, that's what...
I have hope for our country.
That's how this started. And you mustn't think that people just latched on to, let's not pay e-tolls to teach government a lesson. If e-tolls was right, if e-tolls was done properly, if the trust factor was there, if it was good for this country, we would sell it that way and people would pay. We would be fighting. I'm the first one to say that I would put an e-tag in my car if there was an integrated public transport system that came out of the public engagement. engagement processes, because you don't solve a congestion just through widening the road. It becomes induced again in the next 5 to 7 years. A lot of research is done on this. And the tolling, by the way, in the countries where it does work, that money doesn't go to the road construction bonds, by the way. It goes into the public transport integrated systems. It improves the public transport system. That's what happened in London and in Stockholm, and they ran referendums to get the approvals of the people. This is what good public consultation is about.
But Wayne, is there a danger, just coming to back to what Kuni said, is there a danger in fostering civil disobedience around an issue like this, that people are going to say, well, to hell with it, I'm not paying for anything anymore?
No, well, you see, that's that's where we have to be very, very cautious. We were asked on many occasions, I can tell you now, for the last 2 years up until Zuma left, we were asked to start this tax revolt, you know, a big, meaningful tax revolt around the country. We had to caution people, you do not want to go there. You will, the ramifications of, you never recover from that, firstly. Secondly, we have to be law-abiding and tax-abiding. And then there's this contradiction on the ETOLs. When there was a big call on the TV licenses, and there's obviously going to be low tax morality, especially on that one when it's 260 Rand a year, and it costs you more to try and summons people. So they don't summons, they can't, and people stop paying. And what we're saying to government is, this is the time when you take a stock of the situation. This is what they had to do many years ago when they decided to scrap the bicycle license or a dog license. I mean, the time for TV license is to go. Now, what happens? Government needs that money. And it comes, coming to the question that Kuni put in on the, with regards to fuel levies as they start to diminish. Of course, they're going to tax revenue streams change over years, and what you have to do is find new ways. So you might put that tax onto the batteries of the expensive cars or for whatever it is. So you will find ways to get the revenues, and we need to put in the most efficient and the most effective tax schemes in this country, so that you don't have to run around chasing people, even if you've got 80% compliance, 20% of them, because it's costly. And the Portugal tolling scheme that has failed, the same thing they said, we got 80% compliance, and it becomes too costly to chase the 20%. So you've got to look at alternatives. So we're not for 1 minute advocating tax immorality and just stop paying. But when you have to be focused on a specific matter, and we are on this, just as the people had to defy a past law in the past because it was the most gross and irrational law at the time, you have to defy, you have to become civilly disobedient to get the message through to government that if you want to run roughshod over a process, if you want to put in place schemes and systems that are unworkable, that are not in the best interest of the public, then you must feel the wrath of the public. And that's exactly what's happening here. But we are extremely cautious to say that this must now flow out into anything else. But of course that's going to happen.
That's exactly the point. The point is that, and I mean, people can go and research it. I mean, they don't need to take my word for it. People can go to the High Court and see that there is a ruling that says tolling is legal, it can proceed. Now we're saying, because the one thing in my view that has saved South Africa so far is our democracy and the judiciary. Mm-hmm. The judiciary has saved us from government that had corrupt elements in it. That actually, I mean, we see that happening currently at the Zondo Commission. So, if we now say that the very same judiciary that we invest in, that we rely on to actually hold the national executive accountable, government accountable, we defy that because we don't agree with the outcome, then I think it's like, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it. Sometimes we as South Africans have to understand that I don't like paying tax. I really don't like paying tax.
I don't mind paying tax.
Okay? I don't know of anybody except you, Wayne, that likes paying tax. But the issue is that we must be careful not to create a lawlessness society. Because if we continue down this road, I'm really concerned that what is next? So people don't pay for their houses or their bonds because I currently don't pay for electricity.
Nobody's saying that.
I don't pay for water. I then don't pay for toll. I don't pay for anything. So we can't have this lawlessness in South Africa.
Out of interest, toll compliance is sitting where? Around 20%?
No,
25%?
No, it is sitting roughly between 27 and 30%. Okay. Depending on whether Mr. David Bakuro makes a statement in the public.
All right, so let's say up to a third of motorists in Gauteng are paying their e-tolls.
1 in 4.
1.5 million users. That's the quantity.
How should those people feel, given that the vast majority are not paying?
I think they're quite upset. And I think they also are upset with government to say that I have been paying, I've been a responsible citizen, and government, how have you held the people that are not paying accountable? Because that's quite important.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. They are paying under duress. A lot of businesses would rather not pay. They're fed up with this. They can't reconcile their accounts. But it's a mess. The people that are trying to do dispute resolution with SANRAL, we get them. We get complaints. People are getting bills that have never been on these roads. And then SANRAL has the audacity to say, well, we've looked at your complaint and sorry, you must just pay. I mean, they said, well, what do I do now? So we'll just tell them you're not going to pay and keep your records of the ludicrous responses to you, because that will stand you good in court. And there are thousands of these, not just any. And
well,
you must also understand.
It's actually not true.
No,
really?
But it is true. No, we see them. We
because
see them,
I actually deal with it.
Yeah,
if
but
you
well,
look
I
at
also
four
deal
no,
with
if you have 4.5 million road users, 4.5 million, then there are going to be people that, for a number of reasons, their accounts are not not accurate.
Seriously, absolutely.
100%.
I mean, even the High Court ruled that they couldn't even use the information from this from the electronic tolling system because it was wrong on the Duduzani
agreement
as it was.
No,
you saw the judgment. The judge
absolutely
said this information is...
No, it was ruled that what they recorded at the emergency services was the incorrect data. The correct data was in the system. Wayne, the one thing that we must be careful for is to discredit the hard work that South Africans are doing. Because this is the thing. You know, these kind of statements are really harmful to us. It hurts the credibility. And I can tell you that there's 1,200 South Africans working on this system every single day, and they are committed to making the system work. They take a lot of abuse, and because I think the public are not always easy to deal with. But we should not make the statements. And this I can say to you. I mean, I had to comply with additional regulations set by the NRCS. We have complied. So our system is fully certified and complied with.
But it's not working.
It is accurate, Wayne.
But Kuni, the reality is this. I mean, even if the courts say it's fine and you can go ahead and you've consulted, the reality is you've got to be able to manage it and get all the users to pay.
This is where I need Oto's help. I would say, Wayne.
But you're not going to get our help when? When the scheme was launched deceitfully, when you don't want to answer questions. We want questions. If you answer all the questions that we've got, if there's an independent inquiry into why the tender changed so much and the road construction costs, there was no independent inquiry.
The public protector is there to protect the public, isn't it?
The independent inquiry I'm talking about, which explains why the bond, tender amount went from 4.6 billion for your contract, by the way, and you should know what that is, to over 8.4 billion rand on the operations service. We want the detail, not the fact that VAT added to that. VAT is 14% out of 77%. And we want an independent inquiry, because our research shows that road construction, by the way, the GFIP, and now just go back to what I said earlier on. 4.5 billion was what SANRAL said just 3 years before they started for 340 kilometers. They end up paying 17.9 for 186. We pick up, and this is with engineers giving us input, that this road construction shouldn't have cost more than 10 billion rand, between 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to do the independent. We're talking about independent inquiry. And when we've engaged with and try and find this information on the internet where everything else is, it's missing. So there's too much smoke. There's too much that's wrong here, Kuni. So you're not going to get us to agree. And in the media, when Vusi Mona misleads the public on the uptake numbers, you start shooting yourself in the foot when you're not transparent, when you're not open. So we will never, until this is cleared and all of these questions answered, we will never support it.
So it's important, Wayne, that again, because I think this is, I don't know what it causes, but when you mix arguments, when I listen to your argument, you mention both the construction cost and the ETL cost, yes, in the same sentence. It's actually fundamentally two different.
We know that.
Two different things.
But they're related.
But no.
They are.
But the public that you inform, the public that you have an obligation to share an honest, transparent view with, you are not giving them that.
We've always separated the two.
No, I just listened to what your conversation.
Exactly.
We can replay it. Right,
they
now.
Are.
You mention the construction of 4.5, and then you mention our,
yes,
contract of 4.5.
They
the
are,
average public do not even understand that conversation.
Do you know, Kuni, that if the road construction cost had have come in at 9 to 10 billion rand, that now, and we're talking all things being equal, had they got the money, the 27% is what the cost of the administration would have been. So if the road was nearly half the price, I mean, how crazy is that to try and spend, which is what their contract is on the operating side at 8.6 billion, this is if everything had have happened,
again,
they would have been funding.
It's factually incorrect.
No, it's not. Well, I'll show you the contract. I'll show you the contract.
I can show you the payment certificates. Payment certificates are way less than
of course you're getting paid. Oh, no, you know why. Do you know why? Because you're not getting the money because the public are not giving you the money.
Absolutely. It is a wrong perception.
Have you seen your contract?
Yes, I have seen it. I read that contract every day.
Okay.
And that contract is not based. It is not based on the fact that we get paid. We get paid per rate.
The contract that was signed.
So I get paid for rates that I deliver services for. So I, for example, somebody says to me, Kuni, deliver me a person that sits behind the computer here. You charge me a rate. That rate was in the tender in 2009. That is what I get paid. I don't get paid a percentage of income. I don't get paid a percentage of anything. So the misnomer that is created is to say that we don't earn enough money because the contribution is poor.
This actually leads me on very nicely to the next question I wanted to ask, and that's really to get an understanding of the collection of ETOLs and where the money really goes. So the ETOLs are collected by ETC. That money then goes to SANRAL?
ETC doesn't change. So we manage a system. The cash never gets into ETC's hands. It goes straight into the SANRAL toll account.
And from there, it goes where?
So from there, SANRAL utilizes that for their tolling operations.
And they pay,
So I deliver services. So SANRAL has a schedule. Let's say schedules. If you look at my contract, which is a public domain, it's 1,200 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So there are the variety of services that I have to provide. Like I have to maintain the gantries. I have to upgrade equipment. I have to provide customer service center. I have to provide a call center. For each one of those services, we charge a monthly rate, and we get paid that monthly rate by SANRAL. Mm. It's as simple as that.
Now, the gantries themselves and the technology that's used in the ETOLs, that was provided by a company called Capsch.
Yes.
That's an Austrian company.
Yes.
Do they collect a fee from every toll transaction?
Capsch owns ETC, 100%.
No.
Don't
so,
they?
Two things.
Don't they?
Your question, do they collect a fee? No.
No.
Absolutely not.
ETC does.
ETC only recovers its money through providing a schedule of services. And if I do not deliver, I've got 106 different KPIs that I have to comply with every single month. If I do not achieve those key performance indicators, I actually get penalized for the services. So it is a services contract that we have. We do not get a percentage of the revenue. But this is the kicker. So the envisaged income is about 2.8 billion. I'm using your figures on your website. 2.8 billion.
What is that in your mind?
It's roughly about those numbers. The argument that OTA raises is to say, but you know, we pay 90% of the income towards the ETO. It is the reason for that is because you have 27% compliance. If you had 90% compliance, there would be 2 billion rand that would go towards SANRAL paying off their debt.
Why do you have 27% compliance?
Okay.
That's the problem.
The reason why we have 27% compliance is because OTA is actually promoting public disobedience.
OTA only.
Well.
And the public themselves.
They're part of it.
And the public themselves. Of course we are.
So
we're not saying no, but you're putting all this blame on us.
We're having this conversation.
Are you putting
right
all
now
of this blame on us?
Well.
Seriously.
Is the shoe fit?
I mean, I wish we were that powerful.
The thing for me is that we have to start turning this country around. And this, I think, is really, for me, that's important, is because if we are able, as South Africans, to find a solution to the GFIP, whatever that solution is, whether it is a different funding scheme, a hybrid scheme, I don't care. We would have solved, I think, a very big problem for South Africa, and that is that we will have found a way to move beyond where we are stuck. I believe South Africa is in a hole. I think we absolutely have to get together to find solutions.
Well, let's start to look at some of these solutions.
And that's exactly it. We've provided opportunities of solutions. We provided alternatives. Used the existing mechanism right back when this thing raised its head. And as we've said, we would have already funded the road. So that's the sad reality. And it's never too late to undo a bad decision. And to start with that right now, you know, if you had have gone and said to the public 4 years ago, 5 years ago, you don't even have to, by the way. The Treasury doesn't have to. They've increased the fuel levy, by two rand and 10 cents. And we just said, if it is a part of the solution, ring fence 10 cents. Don't even have to ring fence it because Treasury takes it, as we've said, and it goes into the pot. And then you say to Sanral, by the way, which they've done anyway, by the way, last year we gave you 10 billion, we're now going to give you 12 billion. And it started out at about 6 or 7 billion rand when this freeway upgrade was happening.
But so, you know that that's not true. The 10 cents.
No, hold on.
The 10 cents argument is an argument that you raised in 2013 somewhere.
Oh, no, now with interest it's going to be a bit more.
Of course. It's 1 rand 71.
No, it isn't. Absolutely
and,
not.
And this is the issue. But
Kuni, where do you get that from?
Well,
we've shown you that 22 billion liters of fuel times 10 cents gives you the 2 billion rand, 2.2 billion rand a year, which if you had taken the 17.9 billion rand, you'd be able to fund that through 2.2 billion rand a year over 24 years. You pay back PRC. And by the way, the share, the bonds were given by PRC.
No, PRC, it was on the open market.
Yeah, but PRC took that bond. You know that.
No, not the whole bond. So, again, Wayne, it's a bit of misinformation here.
Well,
this is the issue.
What's misinformation?
The misinformation is that those bonds are raised on the open market.
I know they are, but PIC took those bonds.
Not all of them.
20 billion rand. You only needed 17.9 for the road construction. So don't conflate it by throwing in all the gantries.
So the 40.5 billion that needs to be repaid in half the time. So this is what happened. Because we have not found a solution, the 20 billion has become 40 billion.
But whose fault, Kuni, is it that we haven't found a solution? You procrastinated. Government has procrastinated for 5 years now.
Well, what is the solution? I mean, people are not paying. The
majority of people
are not paying.
Beat people to
you
pay.
You say that the EARTA Act, which is going to come into effect when next year?
Yeah. I think it's quite a negative way to try and do it through summonses.
How do we fix it?
I think, first of all, we actually need to get civil society, we need to get private sector, and we need to get public sector together to say, guys, we're going to find solutions for our problems.
But okay? But
we can't come. So if we are going to find a solution going forward, then we have to inform the public in a very transparent way. We can't inform the public to say, if you paid 10 cents 6 or 7 years ago, it would have been different, because that's immaterial. The facts that we have today is that we need a 1 rand 71 to pay for 40 billion in half the time settle the bill.
Okay, but you're trying to find the solution. Now, I just want to say this. If government was serious about finding the solution, you would have thought by now, just by now, 4 years later, where the scheme is in its situation, that a minister of transport would have said, Arta, can we have a chat? Because you seem to be a player here that's an influencing decision. Do you know that we've reached out right from the beginning, Spoon de Bele, for the very brief period, Ben was there, I forget his surname.
Ngubani? Ngubani?
No, not him, his name.
Ben Martins.
Ben Martins. Mm-hmm. Dupuy Peters went around. I had to come to her house 3 times to discuss, nothing formal, and said, we need to discuss it. We sit here, Bladen Zamande, previous minister, don't want to engage. Now, we have got to get down. I agree with Kuni, we've got to find the solution, because we've got to. These roads have to be paid for. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to do that. You negotiate with the bondholder. who is PIC on this specific one, say, guys, we're going to have to renegotiate new terms, just as they're doing on the Eskom stuff, and there are problems there. Society might have to contribute a little bit more in a fuel levy increase, although they've pushed that envelope as far beyond where it can, but we might have to stomach that. There are many ways to do it. We've got solutions. We've got ideas. We want to talk. Do you think government's opening the door? Do you think government wants to? Well, if they don't want to, then how do you ask civil society to be part of the solution when you don't invite them in? You close the door on them the whole time. So please, if you're going to be serious about it, go back and have a chat with Skumbuza at SANRAL. Bring the minister in. Bring Kasach in. Let's sit around the table and find the solution, because we do want a prosperous country. We do want to pay for our infrastructure. We need all these freeways. But there are other ways to do it. We know that.
Beyond enforcement, I mean, you said let's have a conversation.
Yes.
But specifically, what do you believe are the alternative
options? So I think there are a number of alternatives. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, one of the things that's not been clearly communicated to people is that what Wayne also alluded to is that there's a differentiation between the e-toll system and the e-NATIS system. The e-NATIS system is the national registry of data of vehicles. Yeah. That is the Bible of vehicles in South Africa. We all know that that system is currently defective.
Mm, it's flawed.
It's flawed. Mm. So it needs to be fixed. Here, on the other hand, you have this fantastic hardware, fantastic software that government, it belongs to actually the citizens. Mm-hmm. It belongs to, it's an asset. So my view on it would be to say, find ways of using this technology to fix e-NATIS, because we have to fix, start fixing, for example, e-NATIS.
Yeah.
Then I think we also need to see, how do we repurpose some of this asset that we have?
Yeah.
And there are many ways of doing it. So I'm all for finding those solutions. I'm all for saying, you know, repurpose the asset. All that I'm saying is, we can't just switch off systems and think our problems is going to go away, because if those problems will stick with us. And if we can work together, then I think we will find
we
actually have a lot of more common ground than we thought.
I agree, and we welcome sitting down with government and finding a solution. All we're saying is we've written, and nothing's happening. So we will continue until they say, let's chat, because I think we can find the solution.
Yes. And Wayne, I mean, that for me, if that is the positive outcome of today, then I am ecstatic, because that is all we want. I think, you know, for me, it's honestly, and I've said that publicly, this is a higher calling, like it is for Wayne. The higher calling is for me is to say, if we are able to find a solution for society's problems, then we will have a prosperous future for our next generation. And that's what it's all about. Yeah. That for me is that's what drives me. It, whether it's an ETOL system, whether we repurpose it, whether we use it for policing, whatever the case might be, do not destroy what we have. Because if we do that, then we are no better than people burning down a school because they're upset with service delivery.
No, we've never said destroy.
We shouldn't destroy systems. Yeah. And that's what I'm careful of, is that if we do that, then we also in this anarchy situation.
Yeah. Right. After our discussion today, are you optimistic that we can take this forward and resolve this without the courts being involved? Or do you think that ultimately it's going to be down to the legal system to decide the outcome of this entire project?
You see, for us, it's sad when government goes to war. I call war in inverted commas with its citizens. You know, there are 3 million vehicles that are on default on the scheme. And probably half of that is minuscule, so you can write that off. Even 1.5 million owing substantive amounts of money. Is government seriously going to summons them? Because for the last 2 years, they've been doing this. Mm-hmm. They've served 3,500 summons has actually been intention to defend have been noted. That's just like it's a pinprick in the greater scheme of things. And what are we hoping to achieve? Because even, and I can tell you this now, even if a court says no, but you must pay to an individual. You cannot suck the 9 or 10 billion rand that is owing out of this economy into that space. Firstly, secondly, you might get that person, and you might get 10,000 people like saying, "Okay, out of fear, let me do something." But you're never going to solve this problem administratively, as you said, on the e-natus matter, postal services. It is so cumbersome and so difficult to go through in the context of this environment. This is not where your administrative systems and compliance levels are different. Mm-hmm. I mean, traffic fines here in Joburg are 20% compliance. And it's sad that I'm not for 1 minute saying people shouldn't pay their traffic fines. It's just a sad reality that we have a degradation of administration, and we see it in local municipalities where we're doing a lot of work now. We see it in government quarters, and we've got to become an efficient country, and an e-tolling system is an efficient system when it's operated and managed with efficient administration systems binding into it. But if it cannot be that way, then we have to find the alternative, because flogging this horse is going to just, they're just going to spend more money to collect, and they're never going to get to where they need to be.
So before we wrap up today's session, maybe just closing thoughts from both of you in 60 seconds. Where would you like to see this go next? What should happen next? Let me start with you, Kuni.
I think what I would really like to see is I would really like to get the cases to court, because that will bring finality to the road user. The road user currently, I think, needs the outcome of the courts, so that we can be sure, is it enforceable, not enforceable, whatever the case might be, and then there's clarity. I think that's first priority. I think the second priority is that I think a lot more people want to start contributing, but the historic debt has become a major issue for them. So historic debt needs to be addressed by government. Mm-hmm. So, for example, either some kind of an elegant solution, and I think government needs to look at this to see how do we allow people to earn back, for example, whatever they owe, rather than people having to settle their bills. I would really like to inform people so they can make up their own minds. For example, around what is the true cost of this e-toll system. And if you have this cost accumulated or amortized over 600 kilometers, because that was actually the plan, then you'll find that the cost is actually very effective, very efficient. Mm-hmm. But and then I would really want us to come up with some really workable solutions. And even if that workable solution is some different model than e-toll, I'm very happy to do that. But I think we need to start focusing our conversation around what are the solutions and driving those solutions. And I think partnership with OTA, partnership with private businesses, I think is key. And that is really great for me, is to see public participation. What we've seen with this land issue is certainly there's been a lot more integration and interaction from the public side.
Hmm. Wayne, your closing thoughts?
Yeah, look, from our side, we know we have to find a solution, because when a country continues to go down a road that it's, you can clearly see there are problems, and it doesn't want to address that and find the solution with society, is not doing itself any favors. So we would happily work with government, and we always have. And we, by the way, we reach out and work with the parliament and committees and government very, very constructively in many parts of this country right now, working with Special Investigations Unit and others uncovering corruption. So we are very linked to finding solutions. But it would be sad to say, well, let's talk about finding a solution in one sense, and on the other sense, out the other door, you are beating the public with these thousands and thousands of summonses. So maybe you want to put a stay on that to say, let's find the solution, because maybe we can save a lot of money and save a lot of angst and save a lot of fight and pushback from society as well, because that's not making anybody happy there. So let's get the priorities right. Let's try and find the solutions, and let's be open and honest. We want answers to a lot of questions that have gone unanswered. And if we get those answers and we get the transparency, we'll be a lot happier. If we don't, we're going to have to make up our own minds as to what's wrong, and we will continue to fight this matter.
Kuni Vermaak is CEO of Electronic Toll Collections, and Wayne Duvenage is CEO of the organization Undoing Tax Abuse. This has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kuni.
Thank you, Wayne. Hold on.
Nice chat.
Yes, definitely.